No relevant financial relationships. I don't get paid for anything that I do. I haven't gotten paid for. All right, Cochrane Justice Health Field. Cochrane Justice Health Field is still the newest entity in the Cochrane collaboration. There's a new field about to be registered, so they're going to kick us off of that pedestal. But Catherine actually is the person who started the Cochrane Justice Health Field. I'm not going to spend a tremendous amount of time talking about the Cochrane collaboration in this audience. I hope that we are all familiar with them. World leader in independent, rigorous evaluation on healthcare issues, equal access, focuses on effectiveness of interventions in healthcare. You look at the Cochrane reviews in the Cochrane Library, and they evaluate the quality of existing research. It's a resource synthesis organization, meta-analysis, to summarize previous research. Conclusions that they draw can look at the effect size of interventions, the accuracy of diagnostic instruments, the economic costs of care. It's not just whether it works or not, is it the best bang for the buck, and the harms. Not everything is all flowers and unicorns. There can be some harm with the care as well. There are, excuse me, over 30,000 contributors out of 113, that come from 113 countries. They're tops in the fields of statisticians, librarians, and clinicians. And there's a partnership. Almost none of this is done alone. It's a collaboration. Funny note, the CEO of Cochrane actually hates the word collaboration. I've gotten used to it. But he says in some countries in the world, the word collaborator has a very pejorative context. And since this is such an international organization, it's difficult to explain to people that collaboration can mean good things as well. We in Cochrane Justice Health, well, excuse me, this isn't Justice Health. The Cochrane collaboration itself has a formal partnership with the World Health Organization, and they've had a seat on the General Assembly since 2010. If you go to the Cochrane review, the library, and look at the reviews, and I implore all of you to do this. I'm going to get on my salesman pitch right here. If you don't go to Cochrane and look up reviews, you're really missing out. Anything. Let's say this is a great little exercise. Say, all right, what does someone in my family have? What do I have? My mother last year hurt her shoulder and was going in for rotator cuff surgery. So I popped in rotator cuff surgery and looked at it, and the Cochrane review said basically physical therapy is no worse than surgery. So she canceled her surgery, and she's doing fine. She went and had physical therapy. And so whenever you have any sort of medical question, please, please, please go to the Cochrane Library and look it up, because this is where the top research is. The mammogram controversy that's all in the news right now, right there. What really interesting here for this particular speech, this is the top Cochrane searches in the last 3 months. And I don't know if you can see this, but the number one search in the past 3 months has to do with the review of the Scared Straight and other juvenile awareness programs for preventing juvenile delinquency. So Cochrane itself is doing justice health research, whether they knew it or not. And that's the top searched one in the past 3 months. So I thought that was really, really interesting to show that our population is that crucial to the Cochrane consumer. Cochrane Justice Health Field, that's the one that Catherine and I started. It's a formal entity in the Cochrane collaboration since 2010. MARC is the official Cochrane designation, the members, the Monitoring and Registration Committee. They're actually closing it, it's not that important. We're interested in looking at the health world of anyone involved in the justice world. I mean, it's kind of vague, but you think about the people who are involved in the justice world. Prisoners pop to your mind quickly, incarcerated people, but a lot of people involved in justice aren't actually incarcerated, probation and parole. So that's another huge population. And one that Catherine and I are actually, we've been 99% done with a really great article for about 2 years, and we just have to lick the stamp and stick it on, is the children of the incarcerated. And we have actually found that the children of the incarcerated have some pretty serious health concerns relative to other populations. So we got the people who are locked up, otherwise affected by the contact. It's not an American or U.S.-focused entity. Cochrane is worldwide. The other co-director of the Justice Health Field is in Australia. So we've got the whole world covered. So don't think that this is just an American entity. Our goal is to organize the existing knowledge. That's crucial, that there's all this knowledge floating around out there, but it's never really been systematically organized about justice health. Prioritize clinical and systems care questions. We actually have a conference starting tomorrow where we are bringing in clinicians, correctional healthcare clinicians from all over the country to help us identify the questions. We tried doing it with just academics, but we don't know the right questions to ask. So we have the prison healthcare directors coming, and we're going to really focus on trying to figure out what their needs are. Conduct systematic reviews on the effectiveness of interventions. That's the key element of Cochrane. That's what Cochrane does, so we have to do that and evaluate these interventions. Identify gaps in primary research. There's a lot that hasn't been done. Disseminate findings to networks. We don't just collect it. We share it as well. And with this organizational effort, we're trying to reduce duplication. It's better to have communication so we don't have three different groups doing the same thing. And you'll see some of our collaborations that we're trying to eliminate that and increase global representation of this field. Cochrane Justice Health Field, how, why, and what? How did we get here today? It's an interesting story. I've been here since day one. I mean, it's a brand new entity. It's not one of those things that I inherited from my grandfather or anything. We've been here a very short time. 2007, there was a meeting called the Federal Initiative on Juvenile Justice Health. It involved the United States Surgeon General. I don't know if you can see. That's Acting Surgeon General Ken Mortsugu. It involved the U.S. Attorney General's Office. This is retired U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese, and the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention. He was a presidential appointment, Bob Flores. This is the first time these entities ever got together. The Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, Surgeon General's Office, and someone from Attorney General, even though it was a retired Attorney General. This was at George Mason University, and the lead author, Catherine Gallagher, she's the one who did this. She brought this together. We are the people who came up with this federal initiative. And so this is the OJJDP announcement about it. But I thought I'd show you another photograph. They edited the previous one for just the important people. That's Catherine, if you haven't met her. There she is. And apparently I'm tall, or everyone else is really short. But I thought, I never noticed that until this. Maybe that's why they cropped it out. So that's where this started. And what we did, it wasn't just a meeting. We actually spent a lot of time prepping for it and doing a lot of research to sort of describe the status quo. Where is the state of research for correctional health care? And so we identified and came up with a coding process for over 4,000 primary studies. We looked at the prevalence of certain conditions. The prevalence, the goal is to compare the prevalence of an incarcerated population to the non-incarcerated population. It's difficult to do, but there are certainly available studies. How different systems react or behave, the juvenile system versus the adult and so on, probation versus incarceration, the interventions that they use, the risks. Laws and guidelines are a crucial element when looking at a correctional healthcare system because, let's be honest, the systems aren't providing health care out of the goodness of their heart. They're providing it on legal mandate. They do it because they have to do it. And so that's what we have found is when changes take place in correctional health care, it's because of some sort of legal motivation. And some results of what we found. And this is real quick. I mean, all of these could be a whole paper. But we're looking at studies that compare certain conditions to the general adolescent population. And these are risks, relative risks. Here, the old-fashioned way. I want a piece of chalk and a blackboard. That's how I run things. But look at the, none of them are below the line. when you start looking at some vaccine preventable even, how much more infected the incarcerated, the juvenile population is compared to the general population. TB, this should be gone. This is a disease that simply shouldn't exist in 2007. But if you look at the risk of incarcerated or juvenile justice system involved kids versus the general adolescent population, this is just overwhelming. And we see this in the adult prison population as well, that if we could eliminate TB in the correctional population, you'd pretty much eliminate TB in this country. I mean, that's a huge, gross oversimplification. But TB and incarceration have a very intimate relationship. But all these other ones are strongly associated as well. I mean, you want to spend, each one of these I want to spend a year looking at and saying, what's the relationship? Some of them you can think, pop in your head, it's interesting. Dental. Why are juveniles who are involved in justice, why is their dental condition so much worse? Because they've never been to a dentist. I mean, it's that simple. Their first dental treatment is in a juvenile system. In the adult system, it's very different. Why do adults in prison have a bad dental? It's the drugs that they're on, meth mouth and things like that, and the combination with their poor juvenile dental care as well. So, I mean, these are really neat little, you look at each condition and you say, why is this? But TB is just, it's embarrassing. Hep C, these are all the different studies, not all of them, but this is, a sample of the different studies that look at testing positive for hepatitis C in juvenile correctional population. And so these are low percentages if all you think is, wow, 2%, 2.5% of the population is testing positive. But compare that to the non-incarcerated population, and all of a sudden, it's 2, 3, 10 times higher than the general population. Okay, what we looked at, and Catherine actually leads a census of juvenile facilities, so she has a great access to data. We were looking at a population of 1.25 million kids. Most of these are in a detention. Detentions are very short stay facilities, a day, day and a half, maybe a week. So that's why they're in there. Shelters are a little longer. And so we're looking at a total juvenile population of close to 2 million that goes through in our sample of some form of correctional attention. This is a great opportunity. These are kids who've never had certain vaccinations or dental care or eye tests or hearing tests or whatever. And so so you don't just become real pessimistic and hide in a corner in a fetal position. You think of this as an opportunity. This is a good time. These kids aren't going to have any other opportunity for some of these treatments or prevention. So let's do it here. Conclusions. There's a tremendous amount of variation in practice. Our juvenile justice system is not an integrated federal system. There's no such thing as a federal juvenile justice system in America. They're local. And so because of that, there's tremendous variations between states, between counties, between facilities, between levels of the facility itself. A detention center does things very differently than a long-term residential facility. Predictable obstacles to care, funding, lack of interest, small sample studies. A lot of the tests had poor, low rigor. And again, the standards for these care are often by courts. There aren't any strong guidelines in this country for juvenile correctional health care, and the few that are out there are by accrediting agencies for the most part without using any sort of evidence-based standard to develop those standards. They just come up with, here's a standard. And the laws and policies are not tied to the operations. They're, I'm going to let you in on a little secret, what the motivator for most of these laws and policies, when a new law comes in. A lawsuit. Some kid gets sick, injured, killed, and there's a lawsuit. Nonetheless, the prevalence vastly exceeds that of the general population. Kids are sicker who are involved. There's a tremendous geographic variation. Most of the research is about the deepest end population. Those kids who are in the long-term secure facilities would be comparable to a prison in the adult system. But that's not where most of the kids are. Most of the kids were in the front end. Remember, they're only there for a short stay, but most of the research is in the deep end. Systems are predictable, obstacles are predictable, the outcomes are bad, opportunities are missed, so on. It's not a good story, but again, got to look at this optimistically. There are opportunities. The conclusions. Summarize the state of knowledge. Prioritize the clinical questions. Rigorous global research synthesis. Find out what the primary needs are. Open access, automated tools. I've got to keep going quicker. Ultimate goals, evidence-based guidelines and practices. That's why we're all here, is have evidence to guide these what these facilities are actually doing. And that will improve health and related outcomes. And the selling point is it'll be cheaper. It actually will. If you do it right, it'll save money. Primary research leads to the synthesis. We need RCTs to guide there might be some ethical, but it's not impossible to do an RCT in this world. Why the affiliation with Cochrane? They have a global network. They have this standard accepted rigor. And when it has the Cochrane label on it, it's pretty much the gold standard in the research world. There's independence. And a lot of the research is already sort of out there in Cochrane. Like I showed you, that number one search in the past 3 years. We didn't do that. That was a different group that did that. But it's clearly related to what we're doing. So the affiliation with Cochrane allows a formal relationship with those as well. Cochrane, to become this Cochrane group, there was a two-year peer review process. We had to go to 3 international preliminary meetings. We had to do a full application. This is fully staffed out of George Mason. There's actually 2 groups at George Mason. They're sort of now interrelated. It's all the same people. Like she, when I was introduced, I wear 2 hats. If you notice, this is the Cochrane Collaboration College for Policy, but the presentation's about the justice health field. It's all incestuous. We're all the same people. So the formal George Mason support is more for the college, but the justice health field is part of that as well. We have some other grants. We have an AHRQ conference grant. That's how we're bringing in those clinicians for the next couple of days. Justice health field, we have our own website on Cochrane. I'm going quickly because of the limited time. Here we are at one of the international conferences. That's the CEO of the Cochrane Collaboration. Alex, that's Ajima. Okay. She'll pick you up tomorrow. Sample, this is what we're doing tomorrow, the Conference on Evidence-Based Correctional Healthcare in Washington, D.C. Here we are at the World Health Organization, the health and prison population. There's Lars right there, and his staff. The Cochrane Justice Health Field is having now formal relationships with around the world with related entities. We're not clearly not the first group to be interested in this, but we have related interests, but not the same. So the World Health Health and Prisons Project. And there's also the University of Massachusetts School of Medicine has the Academic and Health Policy Conference. They're interested in correctional health. We have a formal relationship with them as well. So in March in Atlanta, there's going to be this Correctional Healthcare Conference, and we're going to have a subpart. They haven't changed their website yet, but we will. It's all just signatures before we can do it for this particular one. But we have formal relationships, and we're growing more, and it's just an exploding thing. One of the things that we did is created an open access library of, remember I said we coded a lot of those studies for the 2007 initiative? What we did is all open access now. I don't want to confuse groups, but we started a nonprofit as well, and it hosts these libraries. The Lloyd Society will probably shift those over sometime to the Cochrane website, but we do evidence mapping, so we look at where the studies took place. So if you look at where studies on chlamydia in adult correctional facilities take place, these are where those studies took place in the United States titles. We've got worldwide as well, but not coded to this level around the world. And this is the type So we're looking more at there are more studies on adults than juveniles in both, and North America by far has the most. Again, this is the exportable free library at the nonprofit's website. Shifting here, here's some of the projects the Cochrane Justice Health people have worked on. A couple of weeks ago, Catherine spoke at the Congressional Black Caucus meeting. I don't know if you remember. President Obama spoke there. Clearly, she didn't introduce the president or anything like that. She was at that same meeting, gave a presentation on that. We have fellows at the Cochrane College who are doing their presentations. Oh, and Catherine's on an advisory board to Sebelius at the Health and Human Services as well. Busy, busy, busy. Systematic reviews. We're working on one on STDs for juvenile-involved adolescents, and we're trying to find out what the clinicians want to know about that. Primary research, we're developing a vaccine decision-making algorithm and cost-benefit analyses of community versus institutional supervision. That's a juvenile project. You know, is it more effective to lock them up or keep them in the community for cost-benefit? How can you participate? Well, you can tie in your network. If you're involved in a network like the UMass people or the HIT people, we'd love to partner with you. We're very, very open with partnering. You can come to our meetings. If you're in town tomorrow or the day after and you want to come by, let me know, and we'll squeeze you in on this correctional healthcare one. Invite us to your meetings. We'd like to go. Tell us what you need to know. What condition, what population, what outcomes, what comparison groups. Then register your research if it's related. Let us know. We'll try to get it into the Cochrane registration as well. Participate in a systematic review. That's hard, labor-intensive, takes training, takes time, takes money, but that's sort of that's the Cochrane mantra. That's how I'm supposed to sort of get you involved, is systematic review. Everybody's welcome. We'll visit you. Now, this is his day at work, but this is the World Health Organization in Copenhagen. We went to meet up with Lars and his gang there. So we're interested. We're ready. We have computers. We'll travel. And here we go. Okay.